Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode number 75 of the Chris Rose Rotation, a production of John Boy Media. And we have a little history today as we welcome in the skipper of the San Francisco Giants, man I have known for an awfully long time, Gabe Kapler, to the show. And man, oh man, you win sweetest crib of anybody who's come on the show. I got to tell you, man, that's not a green screen right behind you, right?
No, just over my right shoulder is the San Francisco Bay and the Bay Bridge. I'd love to be able to show you some views. This is a really kick-ass site for sure.
Yeah. So I'm just really curious. I want to get to the important stuff off the top. And first of all, thank you so much for joining us. By the way, you are making history. You are the first manager we have had on this show.
That's quite an honor. Can I ask you about the 19 in the background? I'm seeing that down in the left-hand corner, but it looks like maybe a Rangers jersey. I can't tell.
Okay, that is not a Gabe Kapler Rangers 19. As much as I would like to say it is,
I didn't think it was. Don't give me no. Don't. I figured it wouldn't be. I'm just more curious since I do have good feelings about the number 19. I just wanted to hear a little story about it. So it's so prominent on your screen. You had noticed my background. I felt like, kind of obligated to notice yours.
Yeah. So I'm very cluttered here and I apologize. Obviously, being from Cleveland, I'm a huge Guardians guy. We're going Guardians now. We're in November. So that is a Bob Feller, something special.
That's way better. That's so much better.
You think?
Good for you. Bob Feller. That's the way to go.
I mean, come on. The guy won like 250 games and he missed several years because of wartime. So,
stud. Absolute beast.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be a fun conversation. We got a lot to get into in a short amount of time, but I want to start with really the most important stuff was how the heck did that steak cake that your players got you to taste this year? Please tell Plouffe and I, Plouffe said you did not take a bite of it. I said you did.
Well, I think there's a little bit more to these kind of stories. So Plouffe was right. I didn't eat it, but that doesn't mean that I don't love, you know what I mean? Like, deception is like one thing nonstop, and it's just not accurate. Now Trevor was right. I didn't eat it because I didn't want to eat it. But I had, that day I was like drinking some scotch with the boys, and maybe the next day was cake. But I didn't feel compelled to dive in. It seemed like it was very well received, and everybody in the clubhouse liked eating it.
Who do we know who was behind it? Because I would never have thought of a steak cake in my life.
Oh, man. Yes, we knew who was behind it. I feel like it was some combination of Lerone, our team dietitian, maybe Evan Longoria, who tends to be behind a lot of things and behind the scenes that, it just doesn't come to light. But I think it was a collection of people, and it's kind of cool. They know me very well, and, obviously felt like I was cared for that day. That was dope.
That was pretty good, as was your season. 107 regular season wins. I have to admit to you right now, the first 8 or 9 weeks of the season, I was like, oh, this is such a cute story out in San Francisco.
Right.
All these guys are playing so well and they're building up their trade value, and Farhan's going to be able to ship them off to contenders and they're going to get better prospects because they're all in the last year of their deal. And at what point did you say, my God, this is a team that could win the whole damn thing?
So we actually just followed the tone that was set by the veteran players early in spring training. And we had heard rumblings, and in particular, Buster mentioned it in his retirement press conference, that nobody thought it made any sense to like set the intention or the goal of trying to sneak into the playoffs, like via the wild card, right? If we're going to set goals, we may as well set lofty ones. And I think everybody in our clubhouse respected and appreciated the talent that was in the room, the experience that was in the room, and what had been accomplished, in the past 10 years in San Francisco. So the intention that Buster and Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt and others set was, we want to win the National League West. I think the job of a major league coaching staff and the major league manager is not to set the direction, but to kind of listen to the players and hear where they want to go, and then figure out ways to support them in getting there. And so that's really what happened. Along the way, we just felt like we were a really good team that was coming together. Every single month we were doing something that nobody expected us to do. And it was all because the players had that vision and that belief in themselves, and we were able to get behind that vision and belief.
But please tell me, I want to romanticize this a little bit. In one of my favorite baseball movies of all time, Major League, when the owner's trying to make the team as porous as possible so she can move the team down to Florida, they all get together in that clubhouse meeting, and Lou Brown, the skipper, says, "Well, there's only one fucking thing to do, win the whole damn thing." Yeah. Like,
that's very practiced, Chris. You must have done that many, many times in many, many interviews. Spot on. Very well done. There was none of that, right? Like, you probably know me well to know that I don't believe in like the rah-rah speeches. It is a very Major League, the movie, and not very Major League, the reality. It's not to say that I haven't been around managers in the past that have delivered, you know, very inspiring, you know, shorter speeches, but it's just not the way it goes down. And I mean it when I say this. The players should be the ones speaking up, coaches, managers, front office, be in the background and figure out ways to listen carefully and then follow, you know, kind of follow the lead of the players by giving them as much support as possible.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you for destroying my spirit on that, but I appreciate it because I do know you well enough.
You mentioned I try to keep it as boring as possible.
Well done. So you're probably thinking to yourself, if you're like me, I have no idea what to get my friends and some of my family members. Well, Dugout Mugs has got the perfect gifts for you. And if you act now, it's like the best Black Friday deal ever, and you don't have to wait until the day after Thanksgiving to utilize it. Go to dugoutmugs.com, use the code word JohnBoy. You're going to get 30% off all of their best-selling products. I'm talking about big-time best-selling because there's almost 20,000 five-star reviews. So if there's a baseball fan somewhere in your life, family member, or friend, get on this now. Go get these things because they're made out of baseball bats. You can get something cool engraved here. I suggest the Chris Rose rotation. If you want to go a different direction, that's fine. So you can get the original here. You can get the wind up. There's bottle openers. And of course, there's this, the knob shot, which you can drink out of, or you can make really cool sound effects like this. So once again, go to dugoutmugs.com, code word JohnBoy. You're going to get 30% off. Let's go. Make yourself happy. Make everybody around you happy. Courtesy of Dugout Mugs, as we like to say, cheers. All right, you mentioned Buster Posey. When did you know he was retiring?
A couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that I learned in his retirement presser was that Buster was way ahead of all of us. Right. I think we always knew that there was a possibility that he was going to retire after the season. We also knew that there was the possibility that he was going to get to the end of the season and just want to play another one or two or three. But I think Buster really understood where he was leaning from the beginning of spring training. And one of the things that I found really compelling, really interesting at the end of his presser was he said he was kind of emptying the tank. Now, emptying the tank is usually reserved for what a starting pitcher does when he gets into the seventh inning and he's got 90 pitches or so. He's inching towards the end of his outing. And every once in a while, I'll lean over to our pitching coach, Andrew Bailey, and be like, "Hey, man, is he emptying the tank right now?" Basically, it means it's like, you know, you're running out of gas. You're giving everything you have. You know the finish line is near. You don't have much more to offer. And a very common way to describe what's going on with the starting pitcher. Buster, I think, saw that throughout his season. It's really interesting. He played a ton of games down the stretch as we were hustling and chasing the National League West, way more so than what we had scheduled for him throughout the course of this on two games on, one game off type of schedule that Buster and I collaborated on. But as we got down to the final 10 or 15 games, he and I got together and was like, "We just got to go now. Now you got to play as much as your body can handle." Not me to him, us together collectively agreeing on that. So what he knew at that point and what I didn't know at that point is that he might have been, you know, kind of emptying the tank, which was remarkable because we needed him to do exactly that. And then we needed him to show up the way he did in the postseason, just play every game of our postseason. He did that as well. So I think he had a little bit more vision than anyone else, including our field staff, including his teammates, including the front office, and maybe the only person who actually knew where this was headed was Buster and maybe his wife, Kristen. But beyond that, I think, you know, 2-3 weeks ago was the timing.
What are you going to miss most about him? Because you only had him for 1 year. He opted out the 2020 season.
Yeah. Well, impossible to replace, that's for sure. It's not, for me, it's not the stuff that was happening between the lines, because sure, everybody's going to talk about the fact that he was likely the best catcher in the National League, maybe the best catcher in Major League Baseball. And it's arguable. I'm sure you can make a case for others, but that's how I felt about it watching him play every day. He was a great base runner. He was a, his at-bats were so disciplined and so precise. Behind the plate, you know, he was catching and throwing very well. His arm was lightning. His feet were electric. So all of the things that we all see and appreciate every day were showing up daily in the 2021 season. I think what I'll miss is how he makes everybody feel a part of his success. It was evident in this presser where he just distributed so much credit. And Dave Greshner, who's our head athletic trainer, came into my office a little bit earlier today at the ballpark. He's kind of like tearing up, you know, pretty emotional, because, you know, Buster made everybody feel like they were part of his career. And Farhan said something that I thought was really profound, is Buster made Farhan feel like he was a giant. And I think every player and every staff member and every member of our front office, probably everybody that has spent time with Buster in San Francisco, has a story like that. I have it too. I interviewed with Buster when I got the job in San Francisco. I mean, here I am in this office sitting across from Buster Posey, who's going to be one of the players on our roster. And he's kind of vetting me, you know, he's kind of sizing me up, and, you know, we knew about each other, but didn't know each other well. And I felt, when I walked out of that room, like Buster believed in me. So, you know, here's the president of baseball operations. Here's the manager. Here's the head athletic trainer, all feeling like Buster Posey put the wind at our backs. It's the player. It's a very, very unusual thing that happens. And these are the things that we'll probably miss most about Buster.
I love that story. Gabe, we spent a lot of time on this show talking about something that I think is really important in your world. Rebounding from failure. You had to do it as a player. You even had to go play in Japan when nobody here said, hey, Gabe Kapler, come play with us. And then after you spent only 2 years in Philly as a young manager, and you know people were throwing darts at you after that. How tough was that for you to take? Did you have to seek some advice? Was it a family member? Was it somebody where they had to rally you and get you going again?
I don't think so. What stands out to me, Chris, is you know, sort of the arc of my career, and you pointed it out very well. It's a 57th round draft pick, and I think nobody really thought I'd belonged on a professional baseball roster, you know, let alone ultimately getting to the big league. So, you know, I guess by the time I got to the Dodgers as the farm director, and probably well before that, I have some pretty thick skin. You know, it's not one of those things where I feel like I have to go collect feedback. I mean, we are always constantly growing and developing and learning from mistakes and learning from our experiences. But I don't think there's anything profound that anybody said to me. The best examples in my life have always been my mother and my father. My father passed away in December of last year. He's as influential as anybody in my life. I can say the same thing about my mom, and mostly my mom through, you know, her own hardships and her own challenges and the way that she was gritty and tough and a fighter. So I saw that example. My brother probably falls into that category. A lot of people have asked me about baseball mentors, and I think those are important, but it's really, for me, it's really my family members. My sons, Chase and Dane, my older son, my younger son, my older son is Chase, my younger son is Dane. They teach me so much every day. Get a lot of great feedback from them over the years. And, you know, they're 22 and 20 years old now, but they've influenced me in any number of ways.
I respect the hell out of that. I will say this, when I was let go from MLB Network, I had to rely on a lot of people. I was hurt, right? And you didn't feel any pain when the Phillies said, yeah, it's just not working out here. Was there a day or two where you were like, God dang, this really hurts?
What I felt most, you know, kind of looking back on that experience, is just wanted so badly to finish the job. You know, You kind of see this like 2, 3, 4, 5 year plan happening when you sign on to take on a responsibility like the one I took on in Philadelphia. And I just felt like it was, you know, and understandably so, cut short. It's a tough city. You don't win right away and do good things right away. It's going to be a major challenge. I always recognized that. I always felt that. And at the end, I just felt like, man, I just wish we had a little bit more time. But, you know, sometimes you say, oh, that stings. And then something new pops up. Like for you, you know, MLB Network ends, but you've got this cool new opportunity to cover baseball in a much different way, with an entirely different platform, with an entirely new team. And, you know, people like you and to some degree, people like me, we want to turn the page as quickly as possible. Sure, feel the sting of whatever it is that you're dealing with. But then, like, you know, put one foot in front of the other and go get the next opportunity, right? And it's the most important thing we can do is not spend too much time dwelling on the thing that you know, kind of punched us in the gut. It's okay, like, it's time to move on and go accomplish something new.
That's really good advice. I appreciate it. I love it. And I think it kind of connects nicely into where I want to take you next, which is, I know your foundation does a ton of work dealing with mental health. And I think that 10 years ago, you utter the words mental health and you're going to get eye rolls and strange looks, particularly in the field we work in.
Yeah. You know, no question.
What is your biggest accomplishment and your biggest challenge moving forward?
I need to set aside the biggest accomplishments. We're not there yet. We have so much work to do. But I think the biggest challenge is removing some of that stigma so that the eye rolls aren't happening quite as much. We have a great EAP lead. Her name is Shayna Alexander. And in a partnership with Drew Robinson, I don't think I need to, you know, set up the Drew Robinson story. It's right. Remarkable. And if it's not something that you're familiar with, you need to go, you know, check it out, not you, but others. And we had players who were wearing mental health t-shirts on the field all season long in their bullpens, in their workouts. And the eye rolls, you know, weren't happening as much. Now we got a long way to go. What I'd say is the goal is to make mental health every bit as important as the physical health, right? You pull a hamstring or, you know, something happens to you on the field, you have a limp, you can see it, right? Like there's something that's impairing you. It's limiting you. It's compromising your ability to go be good on the baseball field or whatever athletic endeavor you're involved in. But if you're depressed or your anxiety is through the roof or a family member just died, you can't see the limp. You're just expected to show up at the ballpark that day, get in the batter's box and go out and compete against Blake Treinen and Kenley Jansen. It's really strange, right? So I think the goal is to get to a place where a player can walk into the clubhouse and have the same amenities, the same modalities, or the same number of amenities and modalities and opportunities to get right for that night's game, but ultimately to get healthy, period, in real time. So we're not even close to getting there, but from an industry standpoint and an athletic standpoint, those are the two goals. Try to remove as much of the stigma as possible and give us opportunities to get better immediately.
You know, we've seen it in Calvin Ridley, a wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons, has tapped out the last few weeks. He says, he put out on Instagram, I need to work on my mental health. It's happened with players in the NBA. And, you know, I do think that in baseball, we have a tougher fight. Sometimes the wheels are slow to turn, Gabe. And I just hope that more and more people embrace what you're talking about, because I am a big believer in it. I've been in therapy ever since I was a little kid. In fact, I feel like I should go back sometime soon. And that's not a sign of weakness. To me, that's a sign of strength.
I think it's a sign of toughness, right? Like you wouldn't say like, hey, I'm going to the trainer to get worked on and that makes me weak. You know, like it makes me, you know, soft. Like, no, you got to go get ready to do your thing. So your thing is covering baseball, covering sports, talking about sports. Well, how do you get to your best place? Probably to clear your head, you know, be in the best emotional and mental state that you can possibly be in. So I absolutely think it, you know, that's the real toughness, is because it really is going back to one of the points that we made earlier. It's taking action steps and not kind of like being too scared to make a move. It's actually quite like, yeah, I mean, I'm just tough is probably the best way I describe it.
I'm curious, and I know we only have a few more minutes left, but you're covering so much good stuff here. I'm curious how a manager watches the World Series when he's not participating in it. Were you playing along at home with Brian Snitker and Dusty Baker?
I watched so little of the World Series. I had little, if any, interest. I mean, I was excited that Dusty might have gotten his ring.
Right.
Certainly, there's a lot of people in Atlanta that I was rooting for just as people. You know, Alex Anthopoulos, I think, is an outstanding executive. Walt Weiss is the bench coach over there. I think the world of him. Ron Washington, Snit, that whole crew, awesome. But I just didn't – you watch some highlights here and there, but I don't want to watch other teams play in the postseason. You know, it's a just kind of like brings out some sting. I'm a huge baseball fan. But like once you get to the postseason and we got bounced in game five of the division series, it was hard to watch. And I actually don't turn the page entirely until the postseason is over. You start thinking about, you know, next year. So just wasn't able to get to that place where I wanted to turn the page and sit down and watch postseason baseball.
Okay. Respect that. Have you turned the page?
Getting there. You know, I felt like we had a very successful season, 107 wins, you know, National League West title, probably one of the greatest division races in baseball history. And just one of the coolest accomplishments of my life and my career, just to be a part of it, to be a part of that group that accomplished that. But also, like, the goal is always to win the World Series. It's always to be the last team standing. So have I turned the page? I think to a high degree we have, but I think when you step foot at spring training, put on the uniform for the first time, you get out on the grass and you start to get ready. I mean, I think that's when you really turn the page and you're ready.
Fair enough. I really want to know about your beard. Everybody at John Boy, whenever there's a cutaway of you in the dugout, everybody goes, is that felt? It is perfectly manicured. How the heck do you get it so that it looks like some sort of makeup and hair artist from Hollywood has done it? Because there's no way I could pull that off.
Well, you should try.
Well, I did actually. Robbie will bring up a little picture of me. I gave it an effort. This is about the best I could do right here. But that is not Gabe Kapler-esque. That's like a 6 out of 10. Yours is like an 11.
So I have a really good barber here in San Francisco.
Your bench coach, Kai Correa, he looks like a mini Kapler a little bit from a distance. Like if we're like 100 yards away, it's tough to go Gabe, Kai, particularly when we got the glasses. Did we get a 2-for-1 deal on those or what?
So I want to give Kai all the credit in the world here. My vision has been kind of like slightly deteriorating little by little. This spring training, I was trying to see the scoreboard in Scottsdale Stadium. And taking a step back, I had really good vision as a hitter, as a player. So one of the things that I actually did well is I saw the ball. But I was in the dugout and we're kind of looking out at the scoreboard at Scottsdale Stadium and it's a little bit blurry for me. Kai was wearing glasses. I say, hey, let me try on your glasses. And boom, I could see, look great. All of a sudden, like I had really good clear vision. So went and grabbed a pair of sunglasses that were prescription and grabbed a pair of the ones that you see on the bench, which are also prescription. And I'm only wearing them during games because it helps me see better during the games. But yeah, it's been a cool, I'm actually really considering getting LASIK this off season, so I don't have to think about it again. The glasses are kind of fun though. I've had a good time with them.
I think you got to go the other direction. I understand the LASIK talk. I think you've got to get frames that are in totally different colors. Go orange, you know, go giant orange, go black. You go kind of like the cream color occasionally.
Yeah.
Let's accessorize. You're a fashionable dude. Look at you.
I got to tell you, like, you started off by saying, like, you know, how do I do it? How do I get the beard like that? Like, what's the move? And now you're trying to give me fashion advice. I kind of feel like,
no, but
yeah, a little bit. Like, you're like, hey,
okay, a little
orange.
Bit.
Yeah, get the colors. Like, am I supposed to be like taking advice from a guy that's like that?
I'm wearing a John Boy t-shirt and gym shorts today. Okay. You look like you're about to go clubbing right now and you look great. So you're right. You do not need to take it.
I'm joking. I'm just being playful. I'm just kind of giving it back to you.
I'm with you. And I think that all I'm saying is that all the people listening here on the Rose Rotation and at John Boy Media, they would be like, he did it. He listened to Rose and he's got all the multicolored frames. He's on board. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if you take the responsibility of getting the frames, mm-hmm. like kind of maybe in the same style, I should give you, when we get offline, I'll give you the brand of the sunglasses, and you don't make me work for it, I'll wear them. So, but like, you can't really ask me to go do the work.
No, you're right. That's not fair. Yeah. That's totally unfair. Absolutely. Yeah. I would not. You got too much.
Trying to be a good sport and play along, but you're asking me to do work.
Two more things, we'll get you out of here. Was it awesome playing in Japan?
It was really interesting, but I sucked. It was really bad. It was like the worst baseball that I've played in my life. So 2004 in Boston, win the World Series, have a contract offer on the table from the Red Sox, had visions of, but it was as a role player, like fourth outfielder, platoon option with Trot Nixon. And then I had a chance to go play in Japan, but play every day. So I was thinking about how can I parlay an experience like that and then come back and play here in the United States. And as a result, I played really poorly. I wasn't very good. So I came back and I played in Boston in 2005, and people asked me all the time, like you did, what was the experience like in Japan? Everything from the experience side was great. I mean, I love the food. I love the culture. I love going to the ballpark. The team treated me great, but I just played poorly. So it's hard to have a good taste in your mouth about an experience like that if like you just didn't play good. And yeah, that's how I think about it at this point.
Okay. That's fair. We do this with every guest here on the Chris Rose Rotation. We're highly educational. We spin the wheel of moderately interesting things.
Yeah.
Okay. God, I didn't even get a snicker out of you. Not for sure I would have gotten one. Oh, this is a good one for you. Five Ring Circus. We had the Olympics this past summer. What Olympic sport would you have kicked ass in?
Skateboarding.
Seriously?
Yeah, skateboarding. That would be my, I mean, I would have to build up for it. But yeah, I think, you know, as a kid, I was decent on a skateboard and I'm with launch ramps and, you know, like, so that'd be my jam, I think.
So you were rolling around the valley, probably in the skate parks, maybe even doing in some places you shouldn't have been. Did you do the cool stuff? Like, did you buy down
right.
The handrails and stuff places?
You just nailed it. For those people who don't know, like the San Fernando Valley, there's lots of places to break into to skate. So the first place you start with is like the LAUSD middle schools, like Parkman, where it had Parkman Middle School had like this big ramp, cement, but like you could ride it like a ramp. And then there's ditches and valleys and valleys, alleys in the valley, different places to go get on a skateboard and do tricks and things. Yeah, I mean, I could mess around on rails, not like really good skaters can, but my 13-year-old self was good at it. Mm-hmm.
I heard Joe Madden could do that back in the day too. Did you know that?
I didn't. I would think that, like, now I'm picturing Joe on like long boards with big, like long skateboards on bigger wheels with no rails, right? Like nothing to slide on. Although, you know, like maybe the decks were strong enough to handle that at the time.
By the way, great glasses guy in the dugout.
Great, great, great glasses guy. I mean, he's the OG.
He is. He's the glasses OG in the dugout. Gabe, this was fun, man. I appreciate you coming on, giving us a little time and perspective, not only on your 107 win season and Buster Posey, but a lot of the good work you're doing. And once again, the name is Pipeline for Change, correct?
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for spending some time on that. You know, obviously the most important thing that I'm thinking about right now. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Listen, have a great offseason. We'll be keeping up to date on what the Giants are doing in the offseason. There's going to be some moving and shaking, and you guys will come back in 2022 as the defending National League West champions. Sounds pretty good.
Exciting, man. It's really exciting. The expectations will be raised, and that just makes the challenge even greater.
I love it. Good catching up with you. Good seeing you, and hopefully I'll catch you in spring training in 2022.
Same, Chris. Thanks, man.
You got it. Special shout out to our guy, Robbie Scirocco, who puts the show together, and to you for listening. For Gabe Kapler, I am Chris Rose. We'll see you next time on the Chris Rose Rotation, a production of John Boy Media.
Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.